This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 636 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has bombarded areas across Gaza this week, killing 630 Palestinians and wounding more than 2,300 between June 25th and July 2nd in airstrikes, tank shellings, and by snipers, in attacks on residential buildings, tent shelters, cafes, and at U.S.-run so-called aid distribution sites. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza said today, Thursday, July 3rd, that 118 Palestinians were killed and 581 injured since Wednesday evening, including 12 people killed and 49 injured at the U.S. and Israeli-backed aid centers, it added. Since late May, when operations at these U.S.-Israeli sites began, 652 starving Palestinians have been killed trying to obtain food aid. 24 people were killed on Wednesday trying to obtain a box of food. We'll have more on the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in a few minutes. The United Nations Humanitarian Office stated on June 30th that the Israeli military had issued yet another displacement order for people in areas of Jabalia and Gaza City in northern Gaza, affecting at least 150,000 Palestinians, and followed other orders in central Gaza just days before. People are being pushed into overcrowded areas where thousands of others are already staying, the UN adds. These spaces lack shelter, water, and sewage systems, as well as adequate medical facilities. And they are being bombed. On Tuesday, July 1st, at least 17 Palestinians were killed when Israel bombed a building housing forcibly displaced families in the Zeitoun neighborhood of Gaza City. Mahmoud Bassal, the spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense, said that Israeli forces bombed 25 homes in Gaza City on Tuesday alone. Bassal added that the Israeli raids resulted in the deaths of 70 people that day, including 11 people waiting for aid, 12 children and 14 women, in addition to more than 200 wounded, some of whom are in critical condition. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said that 5 people, including 2 children, were killed when Israeli airstrikes attacked the tents of displaced people in Al-Mawasi, west of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, also on Tuesday. Al-Mawasi is where Israel has ordered Palestinians in the north to flee. Journalist Nahed Hajjaj documented the aftermath of Tuesday's attacks from the Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City and spoke to a 10-year-old boy, Zain, who is taking care of his wounded younger siblings. That was a clip by reporter Nahed Hajjaj in Gaza City on Tuesday. On Monday, June 30th, Israel bombed the crowded Baqa Cafe on the seaside in Gaza City, killing more than 30 Palestinians, including children, and those gathering for a child's birthday party. The cafe was a gathering spot for families who sought a moment of rest from the bombings and for journalists who needed internet access and a place to charge their phones. A survivor of the attack, Ali Abu Atayla, who was inside the cafe when it was bombed, told the Associated Press that, quote, without a warning, all of a sudden, a warplane hit the place, shaking it like an earthquake. Ismail Abu Hatab, a photojournalist who worked with various media outlets and who organized photo exhibitions outside Palestine, was killed in the bombing. The Gaza government media office said that Abu Hatab is the 228th reporter and media worker to be killed by Israel since October 2023. Also on June 30th, the Israeli army bombed the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah for the 12th time in 21 months. The government media office said that Israel targeted a tent for displaced persons inside the hospital compound, resulting in injuries and material damage to the medical facility. Al Jazeera's Tariq Abu Azoum reported from the site.
Israeli military has just targeted Al-Aqsa, the courtyard of Al-Aqsa Hospital at the moment. This has been a huge explosion and there are people inside. The Israeli military till now did not warn this area before it was struck. And the hospital is in a state of emergency. As we can right now see, this is a makeshift tent that was struck and rescue operations are just trying to take place at the moment by several defense members.
That was Tariq Abu Azoum reporting on June 30th at the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in central Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli and American forces continue to use the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid distribution sites as killing fields. Since the private U.S.-led mercenary company began operations just over a month ago, at least 652 Palestinians have been killed, more than 4,500 Palestinians have been injured, and dozens remain missing while trying to obtain meager amounts of food. Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated this week that, quote, through the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, Israel has introduced a new killing mechanism cloaked in a humanitarian facade, further escalating the genocide in the Gaza Strip. The Israeli army's targeting of starving people near distribution centers has become a systematic daily practice, carried out openly before the world, with international silence perpetuating impunity and allowing this dangerous pattern to continue unpunished, the rights group added. This occurs as the international community, states, and institutions remains unable to take serious action to hold Israel accountable for its crimes, compel it to permit independent relief organizations to resume their work in the Gaza Strip, and lead humanitarian efforts that ensure the population's vital needs are met while safeguarding their lives and dignity. Doctors Without Borders said that the U.S.-Israeli scheme, quote, is slaughter masquerading as humanitarian aid and must be immediately dismantled. An emergency coordinator for Doctors Without Borders in Gaza said, quote, the four distribution sites, all located in areas under the full control of Israeli forces after people had been forcibly displaced from there, are the size of football fields surrounded by watch points, mounds of earth, and barbed wire. The fenced entrance gives only one access point in or out. GHF workers drop the pallets and the boxes of food and open the fences, allowing thousands in all at once to fight down to the last grain of rice. If people arrive early and approach the checkpoints, they get shot. If they arrive on time but there is an overflow and they jump over the mounds and the wires, they get shot. If they arrive late or they shouldn't be in there because it's an, quote, evacuated zone, they get shot, the worker added. On July 1st, more than 160 non-governmental organizations operating in Gaza issued an urgent call for immediate action to end the slaughter at the military-controlled food distribution sites. Quote, concentrating more than 2 million people into further confined areas for a chance to feed their families is not a plan to save lives, the joint statement said. These areas have become sites of repeated massacres in blatant disregard for international humanitarian law. Orphan children and caregivers are among the dead, with children harmed in over half of the attacks on civilians at these sites. With Gaza's healthcare system in ruins, many of those shot are left to bleed out alone, beyond the reach of ambulances and denied life-saving medical care. The groups demanded that third-party states not fund these militarized schemes, but instead support the restoration of, quote, a unified UN-led coordination mechanism grounded in international humanitarian law, inclusive of UNRWA, Palestinian civil society, and the wider humanitarian community to meet people's needs. This past week, the U.S. State Department approved $30 million in funding for the shadowy U.S.-based Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, with Reuters reporting that the U.S. could approve the same amount every month for an indefinite period. Sources speaking anonymously to Reuters said that the State Department, quote, exempted the foundation, which has not publicly disclosed its finances, from an audit usually required for groups receiving USAID grants for the first time. The foundation, which is reportedly based in Delaware but has no clear paper trail behind it, attempted to register an affiliate in Geneva, but it came under legal scrutiny by the Swiss government over its failure to fulfill legal requirements to operate in Switzerland, Reuters reported, including having the correct number of board members, a postal address, or a Swiss bank account, none of which were provided. Swiss media reported on Wednesday that the Swiss Federal Supervisory Authority for Foundations ordered the formal dissolution of the Geneva affiliate of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Part of the plan had to go through Switzerland to try to attract funding under the banner of neutrality and International Geneva, a central hub of international diplomatic missions, reported the Swiss broadcaster RTS earlier this week. According to information from the RTS Investigation Unit, a network of business agents helped find a Swiss representative, in this case, a lawyer with a presence in Geneva. International business partners with whom he regularly dealt convinced him to provide the foundation with an address and a representative in Switzerland as required by law. Journalists approached the Geneva lawyer to respond to information that was beginning to leak from the United States and Israel about the reality of the foundation's plan, which was more military than humanitarian, RTS reported. The lawyer resigned the same day that an article in the Swiss newspaper Le Temps was published. The lawyer said that he resigned after realizing that international business partners had approached him without providing him with full information about the reality of the plan surrounding the foundation. That administrator was never active with the foundation, and no bank account had ever been opened, RTS added. While people are killed every day at these so-called aid sites, and as thousands of tons of food, medicine, fuel, and supplies remain trapped on the other side of Israeli checkpoints just kilometers away, Palestinian children are dying of starvation. The Gaza government media office stated on June 28th that at least 66 children have been killed as a result of malnutrition and Israel's policy of deliberately depriving children of baby formula, nutritional supplements, and food. As the Electronic Intifada's senior editor Maureen Claire Murphy recently reported in her article, No Truce on Horizon as Gaza's Children Starve, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights warned that hundreds of infants and premature babies face life-threatening danger amid a shortage of therapeutic milk. Fortified milk is essential for infants with certain health conditions, but supplies have run out at Gaza's neonatal intensive care units and have all but disappeared in local markets due to Israel's severe restrictions on what enters Gaza's crossings, Murphy wrote. Dr. Jamil Suleiman, the director of Al-Rantisi Hospital in Gaza City, told the Associated Press that fortified formula required for newborns is out of stock and that many mothers, quote, are unable to breastfeed due to severe malnutrition. An American doctor told the French publication Le Monde Diplomatique that in preparation for his recent travel to Gaza on a medical mission, he had packed his suitcases full of basic medical supplies such as gauze, bandages, and sanitary pads, and several cans of baby formula. Once he arrived at the Allenby Bridge crossing, Israeli officers searched his bags and confiscated the baby formula. The coordinator of the medical convoy, Diana Nazal, told Le Monde, quote, the baby formula was confiscated. What other explanation is there if it's not that hunger is being used as a weapon of war in the ongoing genocide in Gaza? The ongoing ban of fuel into Gaza will imminently shut down essential facilities, the UN warned on June 30th, and will impact hospitals, water and sanitation equipment, telecommunications, the movement of cargo from crossings, and the operation of community kitchens. Already, the Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza reported that Al-Shifa Medical Complex has suspended its kidney dialysis services due to fuel shortages. and that intensive care services will be limited to a few hours each day, the UN added. Al Jazeera reporter Hani Mahmoud stated on Tuesday that Al-Shifa Hospital, quote, was once the largest healthcare facility in Gaza, but has slowly turned into a waiting room for death, not just because of the war wounds, but because of a lack of fuel that keeps everything running. This shows that survival in Gaza is not just about escaping the airstrikes, but also about keeping the power on so patients can survive, he said. On January 25th, the World Health Organization said it was able to deliver its first medical shipment into Gaza since March 2nd, a small convoy of 9 trucks carrying essential medical supplies, 2,000 units of blood, and 1,500 units of plasma. The blood and plasma were delivered to Nasser Medical Complex's cold storage facility for onward distribution to hospitals facing critical shortages, amid a growing influx of injuries, many linked to incidents at food distribution sites, said the WHO spokesperson. However, Dr. Izzedine Shahab, a physician and writer in Gaza, announced this week that saline has run out at the Al-Ahli Hospital in Gaza City. He writes, quote, "There is no medicine left here, not for the body, not for the soul. I have long spoken of the disintegration of Gaza's hospitals, how we labor beneath roofs that leak shrapnel, beside beds where children lie half alive. The World Health Organization calls it a collapse. Collapse is too gentle a word. This is annihilation. Today at Ahli Al-Arabi Hospital, we lost the last of our saline. Yes, saline, salt and water, the most elemental tool of medicine. Without it, we cannot hydrate the sick, cleanse a wound, keep a child alive through the night. Without it, our hands are not healing hands. They are hands that bury the living. This morning, a boy was carried in, limp and burning with fever. His father had wrapped his leg in a torn t-shirt soaked with old blood. We had no IV solution, no sterile wash. We used boiled water and a prayer. I looked at the boy's eyes. He did not cry. He had passed beyond crying. In another room, a mother whispered that she feeds her infant boiled lentil water, not out of neglect, out of poverty, out of starvation. Formula now costs more than the monthly aid they no longer receive. She cradled her child with the tender silence of someone who has already rehearsed the funeral. You want numbers? I will not give them. Numbers dehumanize. They make the dead easier to digest. Instead, I give you this: the sound of a child gasping through dust, the look in a nurse's eyes as she realizes she has nothing left to offer, the quiet, unbearable dignity of a people condemned to die tidily, without spectacle." Those are the words of Dr. Izzedine Shahab, writing from Gaza City. One of Gaza's leading doctors was killed along with his family in an Israeli airstrike on their tent shelter in Gaza City on Wednesday. Dr. Marwan Al-Sultan was a cardiologist and the director of the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza, and was the 70th healthcare worker to be killed in the last 50 days, according to Healthcare Workers Watch, speaking to The Guardian. Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, the director of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City and a longtime colleague of Dr. Sultan, said that, quote, "he was a prominent scholar and one of the two remaining cardiologists left in Gaza. Thousands of heart patients will suffer as a result of his killing. His only fault was that he was a doctor. We have no option but to be steadfast, but the sense of loss is devastating." International human rights organizations have renewed their calls to release Dr. Hossam Abu Safiya, the director of Kamal Adwan Hospital, who was abducted by Israeli soldiers at the end of December 2024 and remains in Israeli detention. Dr. John Koller, the co-founder of the Chicago-based medical organization Med Global, spoke to NBC News on June 26th and said that he was, quote, "very afraid that Abu Safiya won't make it out alive from Israeli jail." Abu Safiya was Med Global's lead physician in Gaza. The organization said that five other members of its medical staff are among the approximately 180 civilian health workers from Gaza still held without charge in Israeli prisons. In a new joint statement, 23 civil society organizations, including GLIA, Human Rights Watch, Doctors Without Borders, Physicians for Human Rights, and Médecins du Monde International Network, are calling for the immediate release of the imprisoned health workers. On June 29th, Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya was awarded the 2025 Human Rights Award by the Palestine-based Lawyers for Justice organization, which said, quote, "This award aims to shed light on the sacrifices made by human rights defenders, particularly in the face of the ongoing genocide against civilians in Gaza and the suppression of freedoms. It also seeks to highlight the suffering of political prisoners and those who defend dignity under fire and bombardment." We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight how a new vocabulary is emerging in the genocide by Yusuf Al-Nono, writing from Gaza. Yusuf talks about many new words, quote, "that are making their way into our vocabularies, words that we must now use to match the many unbelievable situations we find ourselves in. We are living in a surreal reality with new Gazawi vocabulary to match," he writes. Gaza was not a quiet place before the war, but people got used to the annoying sounds of al-zanana, or drones. But I don't think we will get used to the sky-splitting roar and high-pitched screeches of the fighter planes that fly overhead. In December 2024, my friend Mahmoud and I were chopping wood for a fire. I had not known Mahmoud for a long time. He was displaced from the nearby Al-Karama area. He was forced to stay at his aunt's house in our neighborhood because his house had been destroyed by an Israeli attack. After a short time, I got to know him a little better and we became friends. Nearby, a group of children were playing as we chopped wood, and then we all heard the abrupt and terrifying shrieking sound of the jet. We covered our heads and got low to the ground, anticipating a missile strike. The children were terrified, and their little bodies shook with fear. They also thought it was a missile coming for us and started screaming. I tried to calm the kids down. I told them it was not a missile, that it was an F-16 that had come very close to the ground in order to confuse people and spread fear. Mahmoud said to the children, "Don't be afraid, the plane shahatat." Before that day, I had only heard the verb shahat in the context of a car screeching to a halt, like when a car travels at a high speed and suddenly slows down. The loud noise that follows, that is from shahat. Now I understand the word in a different way. Every time I hear the sound of a plane ripping across the sky, I say shahatat, shahatat, to calm myself. Those are excerpts from Yusuf Al-Nono's feature, How a New Vocabulary is Emerging in the Genocide, on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine and around the world. Photojournalist Haneen Salem took photos of a group of boys in Gaza. She says, quote, "In a courtyard shattered by war and stripped of all signs of life, I found children sweeping the rubble with their tiny hands, trying to bring back a place that was once a playground. They ran barefoot after a faded ball, as if chasing days that haven't arrived yet. I walked closer and asked one of them, 'Aren't you scared of the drones?' He looked up, breathless, and said, 'When did we ever stop playing?' I smiled, not because the place was safe, but because their souls still believed that playing here in Gaza is the purest form of survival." And that's from the photojournalist Haneen Salem. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza.
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.